So, at this point, how are you feeling? Do you switch into test pilot mode? A problem, a task, something to be solved, analyze? Are you feeling angry, disappointed,
No,
scared?
I actually, I was still disappointed at various times of the mission, particularly when we got around the moon and looked at the landing site. But no, it was, you had to pay attention to duties. The duties at hand were to try to save the situation, and work through whatever had to get worked through to get home. I mean, that was the obviously you're on a new mission now. The old one was in the trash can.
Right. So I guess maybe many people have seen the movie or know some of the story. Tell me about some of the, I guess, the critical phases, things that surprised you. I mean, obviously, the disappointment of not landing on the moon, not completing the mission as planned. But tell me about some of the great things, the wonderful sights, the things you experienced. What was the positives out of the mission for you?
Well, I just to say from the criticality and return, it wasn't too long after we got through that power up, and we had some little dead time till we did that first burn that got us using the descent engine, the landing engine, on the limb to get us back on a free return. There was a little bit of time there, and Jim had asked me to calculate consumables. At that time, we had a return total mission time of 150 something hours, and I used that in my calculations and assumed, I just made an assumption that we could go down to 18 amps power, total power in the limb. It's normal, just what normal power systems up would be 35 amps in the landing mode, where you had all the radars on, landing, rendezvous radar, everything running. Descent to landing, you'd be about 65 amps. So I figured a way I could get down to 18 amps and still have communication and provide data to the ground and run the environmental system, essential things. And using that figure, I got us back to entry even with that longer mission time with the batteries. They would make it. Four batteries in the descent stage, two in the ascent stage. 1600 amp hours each in the descent stage. Water, I computed, and I had us running out of water. I had a curve that I could look at the amps and tell the water usage rate. And at that 18 amps, I ran out of water about 5 hours before we would have, had we stayed on that same plan to entry, would have run out about 5 hours before entry.
And that water is not for your drinking or consuming. That's for cooling
No,
of the instrument.
cooling even that little electronics we had on running. I knew that incidentally and felt comfortable because the data from Limb 5, Apollo 11's limb, when Buzz and Neil left it, they shut off the water valve on purpose. We asked them to. And we watched that ascent vehicle with all the systems on die, in essence. And the first critical component, I think in the guidance and nav system, it failed at about 8 hours with no cooling. So I figured even if I ran short 5 hours, I had a little pad, right? And I did not compute oxygen because we had an abundance of oxygen. We had descent tanks, we had ascent tanks, we had two full backpacks that we would have used had we landed. And the emergency bottles alone on those, that's 6,000 PSI oxygen that can cover a hole in the suit, half inch hole in the suit.
Wow.
Those alone, I knew we could use purge flow through the suits, and they almost in each one of those emergency bottles was almost a day's supply.
All right.
So using it, not just burning it through the hole, but using it judiciously. So I didn't even compute oxygen. I did not even think of the most critical commodity, which were the lithium cartridges. The limb did not have an adequate supply, even if we had gone, could have gone outside and got the spare cartridges off the descent stage.
Oh,
That's
there were
where
spare cartridges out there, were there?
they were. They were down. They were on the descent stage, not in the cabin.
Oh.
the plan was on the first EVA, when you came back up, you'd bring those up.
Why was that? Seemed like a strange, even, strange
I guess,
place to put
storage and weight or whatever. But
oh, balance and weight. Okay.
At any rate, that wouldn't have been enough in either. They were much smaller cartridges than the command module. And so that was a fix the ground had to figure out a workaround. But anyway, I felt comfortable. And so I knew the limb, if nothing else, broke. It was a good vehicle that we could get back to entry. So my biggest concern that built in my mind was how the command module would perform. As we shut it completely down, which it had never been planned to do. It was the mothership. Never been tested to ever be shut down in flight. And furthermore, it got very cold. I didn't realize it, but the water tanks froze in that vehicle. They were found still frozen when they recovered it on board the aircraft carrier in the hangar deck and inspected it.
Wow.
So literally we abused all the specifications on every piece of equipment in that vehicle and with that environment. So it's a question of how is this stuff going to work when we try to turn it all back on. Plus, there wasn't any procedure to turn it back on.
Right.
Never supposed to be shut down, right? So there wasn't any book to go to turn this thing back on either. So that was my biggest concern. I never thought of the heat shield, frankly. Some people, I guess, worried about that. I think primarily in mission control. But I never even thought of the heat shield as a potential problem.
Right. Actually, I'd read somewhere that some people had laid out some... link between the Apollo 1 fire and the successful performance of your command module in that environment, given all the things that they had to do to improve the quality. And can you talk about?
No, I've given it credit in some of the talks I've given, and I think that's certainly true because it not only got very cold, it got very damp. We only had one water separator going in the limb, and it was operating well below its spec at the temperature we ended up in the limb, so it was not doing an adequate job. So I could see water building up in the limb. You could see through the netting. We didn't have inner walls in the limb. We just had netting to kind of keep you from bumping in the wiring and plumbing. And you could see at every turn in the wiring and every turn in any kind of plumbing be a big glob of water sitting there, shimmering.
Wow.
So we went in the command module, Jack and I, to power it up. And we had to actually get out a towel to wipe off the instrument panel because it was covered with water. And we suspected that there would be water behind everything. All the panels had collected. And we worried about that from the standpoint, again, of electric shorts. In fact, as part of our power-up, Jack thought of it, and it was a good idea. He said, when we go to push in all the circuit breakers, they were all out on both the big circuit breaker panels. He said, let's push them in only six at a time. We'll each count and count down, and we'll push in six and stop. It will stop and see if we smell any insulation burning.
Ah.
And that way we can back up and pull those six out and then work backwards and put them in sort of one by one and figure out where the short was.
Right.
So that's how we went through all the activation and the mothership later, because knowing all that water was still in there. I think Apollo 1, I give it credit because they did completely redo the wiring in both vehicles, LEM, lunar module, and command module, and very carefully, hermetically sealed, even at the connector interfaces, as part of that fix they did. So I think that saved us from having this similar, maybe, electric short problem as we went along on the LEM, as well as when we activated the mothership.
I think your reentry, the blackout period of the reentry was longer than expected, and it was dramatized a fair bit in the movie. That actually happened, and what was the reason for that?
I really don't know. It's never been scientifically explained. Gene Kranz, I questioned him about it at one point, and he said the last tracking they had, we were dead center in the corridor on entry. And so nothing, that couldn't have explained it. Now, think it was Chuck Dietrich, one of the, flight dynamics officers, did some runs, and he thought that the shallowing that had happened earlier that caused us to do an extra mid-course on the way back, they thought from the water separator, sublimator rather, on the lunar module was causing some thrusting, very minor thrusting, but nevertheless affecting the trajectory. And he thought maybe we ended up shallow, but still it would, to me, that was a long, long time to have, even a little shallowing, to have caused that long a period of further blackout. So one of these fortunate things that helped Ron Movie's movie to have a little more drama.
Many people talk about the launch, describe the launch, these feelings, what's going on. Not that many people talk about the re-entry, and perhaps you'd like to talk through the re-entry from your perspective. And one question I have is, I don't believe you were fully suited up during the re-entry. Is that correct? And why would that be? In case, like,
I would probably what?
You were not fully suited up?
No. They had decided early on after the success of Apollo 7 not to suit up. By then, you know, you're pretty sure of the cabin integrity. And so it's really, it's not felt to be a...
Even with your vehicle having had an explosion, I thought that would have maybe been an extra bit of insulin.
Oh, no, we'd have lost the cabin pressure long before entry.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
So tell me about the re-entry to the Earth from space.
Well, I guess I can give a pretty good description because I was just an innocent bystander. I didn't have much to do in the right couch. Jim and Jack were more involved with worrying about the guidance, nav, and control performance through that. And so I got to look out the window all the way, and it's an interesting view because you're looking backwards. You're looking behind you. As it starts biting in, the first thing that's unusual was there was kind of a white glow in the spacecraft from the air being ionized around you as you hit the upper, very upper atmosphere, only not many particles, very thin atmosphere, and it ionized those components going 25,000 miles an hour as you barreled in, and it caused this white glowing effect. Now, it didn't last long. And very quickly, then it started getting a red, fiery trail behind you, fairly bright red. And it was kind of pretty when the automated guidance, nav, and control system rolled. That's the way it controlled range, was to roll the vehicle. It was very aerodynamically, it was locked in and pitch and yaw with that blunt capsule. So roll was the only control you had, and to affect range control. And as it rolled, you get a little swirl pattern in that bright red trail. And as you got in a little deeper, the trail started being less red and more toward, call it a brownish red. And finally, just almost a brown, lighter red trail of smoke, literally like trailing you. And then it got down to just now almost a white smoke trail about the time the drogue chutes deployed at roughly 60,000 feet, which tended to jerk a little bit as they popped open, but obviously were out to stabilize the capsule to keep it going blunt end first as you went on down. And there was another jolt at 10,000 feet, and you kind of lost that whole trail by then. There wasn't any trail behind you. And then the main chutes deployed, and they went to a reefed position, otherwise they didn't fully deploy. And that was when you really knew and felt you were going to be home okay, when you got the mains. You could see them, and we had all three out, actually.
Yeah.
And they unreefed and blizzomed all the way. And so that we were in good shape then, I knew, to splash down. The splashdown itself was not as bad as I expected. Apollo 12 before us, it had a very hard splashdown. I think it broke a bracket. It was on the window with a camera.
Oh, yes.
And actually hit Al Bean's head on the way down to the floor. And I think the landings were affected by how much, what the winds were, what the wave state was, sea state was, and how the thing may be swinging a little bit and how you hit a wave as you crashed into the ocean.
Sure.
And our landing was, comparative with what I expected, was a very easy landing. We settled in. Jack had thrown the switches to get rid of the, Jim, I'm not sure who threw the switch, Jack or Jim, but to get rid of the parachutes before it pulled us over upside down, which you wanted to try to avoid. So we just sat there, finished a checklist. There's a checklist you go through to safe the capsule. While meanwhile, the Navy divers are doing their thing outside to get the inflatable shroud around the spacecraft. And they actually knock on the window when they've done their thing to let you out. And they open the hatch. They got a tool they can open it. And they open it to let you out to get into the raft.
Was there much sound in the spacecraft on the reentry with the air rushing around you?
Was there much what sound?
The sound.
No.
Was it very loud?
No. Not a lot of sound. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So let's rewind just a little bit. Fairly shortly before the reentry, you disconnected from the lunar module and then the command module. Actually, the command module. The service module.
Service module first, yeah.
We've all seen a couple of those photographs that were hastily taken.
Right.
What was it like for you eyeballing that and seeing the damage?
Well, I was surprised because looking at that degree of damage and thinking back to the explosion, the explosion had not seemed that severe.
Right.
The amount of, one quarter of the spacecraft blown off. A lot of wiring loose, it was broken. Thermal blankets had been torn apart. You could see some of the leftover torn segments of that. So no, the explosion, I would have thought, would have been more extreme, both felt and heard, than we had for that amount of damage. I'm assuming that was, again, because when this happened, we were in a vacuum of space, so there was no secondary air shock waves like would happen here on Earth. Some of the probably bigger effects of explosion on Earth are not just the immediate flash of the explosion, but those secondary air shock waves.
Shortly after that, then you disconnected from the lunar module, and then that was it. So sad to see the Aquarius,
right,
depart.
Yeah, in fact, Joe Kerwin said this is a good ship. It was. We got our mileage worth out of that limb. It was a good performer.
Actually, I'll just rewind slightly back to Apollo 13, if you wouldn't mind. You got actually ill on the flight on the way back. What was happening there? It was the cold, or?
No, I was lazy and. They asked us to quit dumping urine overboard. We really could not do it through the normal means out the side because we had no electric power and we couldn't run the heaters and we knew it'd freeze, the opening would freeze. But there was an alternate way where you could pull out, unscrew one thing in the hatch itself and you could hook that same little Myrtle device, we called it, up to that and urinate out through the side hatch. At one point, the ground asked us not to dump anything overboard because it was affecting tracking for a while. But what they really meant was for a while.
Oh, not okay.
So we misunderstood and thought they meant not to ever dump again. So for a day and a half, we did a lot of improvising to figure out where we could store urine on board. And as a result, I was lazy and I just hooked up we called a Gemini bag. We had Gemini type urine bags that were backup on board. And when I hooked it up with a prophylactic, and you can dump out of a tube from it, I did not put it on and off. And as a result, that check valve, you end up with a little urine left. And so I was sitting in germs, I guess.
Oh, I see.
Which allowed a germ in that mix to intrude my urinary tract system and develop this infection.
Right.
So that was about a day and a half from entry. I started getting fever and chills.
Sure. Wow.
From urinary tract.
I assume you recovered fairly quickly after the mission from that.
What's that?
I assume you recovered fairly quickly after landing?
It took about 2 weeks.
Oh, is that right?
It was a Pseudomonas bug, like a staph bug you get in the hospital, sure. Which is hard to get rid of. So I got shots for 2 weeks.
Right.
Two shots a day, in fact, to get rid of it.
Right. Now, I understand that Grumman presented North American Rockwell with an invoice after the mission for towage. Is that correct? Was that an urban myth? Or?
That was a joke thing. Somebody had thought about it, and they computed the mileage or whatever and a towing fee or whatever, and they sent them a bill. I don't know if with interest or not, but they sent them a bill for getting their crippled shut down vehicle back to be able to enter. I don't think the Rockwell, North American aviation people thought it was funny at the time.
I'm sure.